Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. This program is for June the 6th, a beautiful Saturday morning, 2015. Satsang, replacing radio, sustaining itself through your contributions, your tax-deductible gifts, sponsorship. And those of you who are sponsors, I want to thank you for your loving kindness that makes this program possible. I really am quite grateful. I want to thank my mystery donor for helping me sustain this program also. He is the one who has paid for this throughout the year. And your donations will start being used for next year. So if you enjoy this program, I hope you will join our sponsorship program. I think the program helps you in many, many different ways. I get all sorts of emails. I'm honored to get them. And I want to thank all of you who participate in allowing me to have this opportunity with you. It's really nice. Let's go to the first question, which is from Andrew. Our theme for today is going to be meditation, that word, that M word that everybody kind of hears but doesn't really recognize. We hear the idea of meditation, but I don't think we really understand the depth of it. Everybody tries to meditate one way or another. I think when they begin hearing that maybe meditation is a possibility, some people just can't just sit there and meditate. They have to do all sorts of other things. I understand all of that, and I get it. And some of the people here that are going to be sharing their insights or their questions about meditation are just beginning, and they're struggling in that beginning phase. So here we go. How do I master meditation to become a lifestyle, as you talk about it in your commentaries and radio programs? Well, these satsangs. Could you please suggest, Andrew from Leucadia, California? That's down in San Diego. Well, I don't think I have ever mastered meditation, Andrew. I really don't. I don't think meditation is something that I master. It masters me. And if I'm diligent in my meditation and allowing, meditation overtakes my entire life. It brings me to a place where I cultivate consciousness and kindness and love inside. So I want to make it clear that meditation is not about something I do to master it, but learning to make it a lifestyle. This is an art. And how do I make it a lifestyle? I'm going to give you some examples that might be very helpful to you, and then again, might not. First of all, you have to look at your home. Look over your home. I always tell my students to make their home an ashram, to make it beautiful, to make it simple, to let it reflect creativity, a sense of humor, whatever it is that's going on in your life. Let it reflect, let it reflect, let it reflect. So, how do we do that? Well, that depends on you. There is an ambient tone to your home. It is something that is a vibration that lives visually as well as audibly. And how you play music in your home, what you intone through your home, is it a place where you just flop after work? You go to work and you come home and you just flop. Is that what it's all about? What is the whole effort, shall we say, of your home? What does it mean to have a home that reflects your meditation practice? Well, that's up to you. But here's how I would do it if I were you, Andrew. I would find the place where I meditate, and I would allow that place to be the hub of my home, the center of my home, the heart of my home. And that's what I have done. Where I meditate is the heart of my home. And then it pours out into the living room. It pours out into the kitchen. It pours out into my dining room. It pours out into my guest room. It pours out into the bathrooms. I have two. It pours out everywhere. And then your sense of humor has to follow it, or whatever it is that, you know, touches your life that makes you smile. I don't know what that would be for you. For me, I am just a caricature of my home, and my home is a caricature of myself. So I do things with a sense, not of pride. I don't put things in my home that clutter up and give prestige to my whatever, or make people think that I'm, you know, this or that affluent or not affluent. I don't do any of that. I put pieces in my home that are kind of parts of my spiritual practice. Things that I've experienced, places I have gone that remind me of the moments of my life that were most precious. And that's what I fill my home with. Now, how much you fill your home with this stuff is the key. If you go overboard, then it becomes clutter. You have to find that balance. It's a symmetry. A person who authentically meditates has a sense of symmetry. That symmetry is what guides and molds what that person does in the course of their lifetime, and it sets up how you live within your home. There is an ambient energy that lives in your home, and you and I may not recognize it, but it is there. I have ambient tones that I ask my students to play in the background. Very, very low, but still way, way down in the background. And these usually are the ambient tones that we are working on at any particular time. Like right now, I have the May 2015, and we're, of course, doing this for June. The May and June ambient tones reflect the meditations that I am offering in May and June. And they are the tones that are hidden in the background. So I ask my students to place them there and to just let them go. You can do it on your iPod and just let it play over and over and over again, way, way, way in the background. I have ambient tones playing 24/7 in my home, and I have for years. Then what you want to do is, when you, so to speak, live in your home, you want to be mindful of everything you are doing. Be aware. Be the witness. Watch yourself chop your vegetables. Watch yourself eat your food. Watch, observe, non-critically, non-judgmentally. What am I doing? How is this? How am I eating? I often catch myself inhaling food, you know, because it was a nasty little habit I developed when I was in college of going from one class to another and inhaling my food on the way to the other class because I had to work and go to school and I just didn't have time to sit down and eat quietly. And I didn't have any real idea of what that even meant. So I have a nasty little habit about that, and I am trying to break it. And when I see myself doing that, I stop, I breathe, I forgive, and I start all over again. So there are many different ways to bring your meditation in as a lifestyle. It's the way you live in your home. Do you live in your home to just flop? Just to, like, here I am, I'm home, flop, turn on the TV, get in that bark lounger, and let it all wash over you, making you maybe forget your day or forget what you're doing or whatever. I don't know. Whatever it is for you. That is not the lifestyle of a person in an authentic spiritual practice. So you're going to want to look at what you do, how you do it, the way you do it, and let love wash over you. Make your home a place that is conducive for contemplation, for compassion, for playfulness, for laughter, for tears if necessary, a sanctuary, a place where you lay down, let's say at night in your bed, and it is actually a sanctuary, something that you live in that brings you kindness and rest and peace. All of these things are deeply important to a person in an authentic spiritual practice. It's a lifestyle. And then as you build that into your home, when you go out into the world, you will build it in your world. And you will carry that lifestyle through your attitudes, through your basic demeanor. And you can keep that sustained effort to move forward in a practice of consciousness. And that's really what it's all about, developing consciousness and being willing to give and forgive at a drop of the hat. So there you are. It's really very simple. Andrew, I don't think anyone has ever asked me this question. No, not publicly. They have never really asked for the details. And I admire your question and I respect it and I'm grateful for it because, frankly, I'd never really thought much about it. With students, I tell them to make their home an ashram, but, you know, typically it's pedestrian at best and doesn't support anything but a mind that's gone amok, emotionally speaking. So this is a really great question. So take assessment of your lifestyle, the way you live, the what you eat, how you live within yourself, and see if that reflects in your house, in your home. And if it does, that's wonderful. I think if we kind of look at our homes, the way we live in them, it's very revealing about our minds and how we let them live us. Very interesting. I hope that helps, Andrew. Yeah, wonderful question. Bless your heart and please forgive me. Namaste. Hey, I so admire creativity like that. Someone asking such an interesting question that I can't remember anyone ever asking me. And I I am refreshed by it. Next question comes from Kenneth, and he says, I'm local, and I don't know what that means. My wife won't meditate. It would be helpful if she did. Rather, she makes it difficult for me, sometimes even chides me, makes fun of me. What should I say to her? Kenneth. I can't tell you what to say to her. You know, I mean, you know, verbatim. What do I say? You know, you could 100 jokes go on in our minds about it, but, you know, you have to understand, Kenneth, she's feeling threatened by you meditating. She probably thinks that you need her, okay, and that's why you're together with her. But as time goes on and you meditate more and more, she's going to think you don't need her anymore and you're becoming independent. And this meditation thing you're doing isn't something maybe she's akin to. I can't tell you how many people, men especially, Andrew, that I've had in my life who have come, I'm sorry, not Andrew, forgive me, Kenneth, how many men I've had come to me in the course of my career to sit down with me in session work and say to me, I want to start my practice, I want to begin, I really want to work on myself, but my wife won't let me. My wife won't let me. She won't let me come to retreats. She won't let me come to workshops. She doesn't want me to do all this. She wants to go to Europe. She wants to travel. She wants to see this. She wants to buy that. She wants to do what she wants to do. She wants to quit work. Blah, 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 blah. I hear it all the time. All the time. And this is why Jesus said, your greatest enemies are those of your own household. So, what can I say to you? I mean, really, you're at the beginning stages of your practice, just beginning, you're starting, and you probably have man disease like all of us men do, where we can't be alone and we're afraid to stand up to our mates, and we shouldn't even be put in that position ever, ever to have to stand up to our mate, ever. But such is the nature of marrying people out of emotionality. I've done it too, so don't feel bad. There you are. And if you say to her, look, can't I have some respect here? Maybe that would be something. Or what is it that threatens you about me practicing meditation? What are you worried about? What are you, you know, what is frightening you? I don't know this woman, so I wouldn't know if she could be honest with you. I wouldn't know if she'd even want to get into a conversation about that. I don't know. I don't know. Only you know. So you're going to have to sit down and find some words within yourself that are not structured to threaten her and ask her, what is it about what I am doing that is bothering you so much? And if she can tell you, then you'll know. But I will bet you she can't tell you because her pride and her vanity is probably at stake here, and her womanhood, the need to be needed, is at stake. So she sees this as some kind of kooky thing you're doing or something that is separating you. I've even had women think that it's like a the other woman thing. Oh, he's doing this meditation, not spending time with me, and I don't know what our relationship will be if he doesn't spend more time with me. Well, maybe he needs to spend some time empty and devoid of me and you and this and that, and refresh himself. Maybe come to grips with things within himself that he can't come to grips with any other way. Really. So why is this so difficult for us? It is difficult because of the way we are, the way we live inside, and what we're afraid of. So I can't tell you exactly what to say to her, but I would have a conversation with her. And if she won't let you meditate, if she thinks it's ridiculous, if she says, okay, go do it, but you know, I think it's stupid or whatever, then you're free. You can do it. But there's going to come a time when it's going to become a confrontation, I can guarantee you. Kenneth, I have been a teacher of meditation for, you know, over 40 years. I know this. I know what's going to happen. It's predictable. She's going to make a problem out of this. I guarantee it. And she's eventually going to draw a line in the sand and say, it's either me and our relationship or that crazy stuff you're doing. And then you're going to have to make a decision. I know you want to negotiate, and you can't believe that someone would that you love or supposedly loves you would ever put you in that extreme position. But I have it in my among my students, and I have it among friends, and I've seen it in my career. And 99 9/10 of the time, the woman wins. The man hates himself in the morning for letting her win, but at least he's not paying the alimony and the child support. And he has to, you know, live there content and hope for the best and whatever. And that's a really crappy life. And that's what people like to live. They're afraid to make moves that would awaken them and change them for the simple fact that if they do, their mate may not go along with them. But if she gives you a little reprieve and you can find a little space in your day, whatever it is for you, to meditate, I say meditate and do everything you can to make love possible in your relationship. But there may come a time when you have to put the gauntlet down. And I don't know who you are, Kenneth, but that takes a lot of huevos rancheros to do. And most men are too far gone to be able to do that. Just my humble observation. Please forgive me. Namaste. Very rarely in my career have I had men try to undermine women for entering into a spiritual practice. And I have a couple of opinions about that too. First of all, they're probably fed up with their wife. And I think a lot of men think, well, maybe this will fix her, you know. She's crazier than a hoot owl, and so maybe meditation will help her. But when it works the other way, I have found 99 9/10 of the time, the woman wins because they know the man is weak, and they know how he is on the inside and how he, you know, cowers under the idea of a divorce or whatever. And what'd you divorce over? Oh, she wouldn't let me meditate. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You'd give up her and the kids for that? You know, that just doesn't make sense to people. Just doesn't. So evolution, spiritual evolution, is a long ways away in our world. Last question goes to Reed, and Reed does not tell me where he lives. What do I do with persisting thoughts and meditation that are very disturbing to me? Some of them are violent, and some of them are seductive. Reed, this is an excellent question. Everybody faces it. The mind throws so many things at us in the course of our meditation, but it's really not the mind. The mind gets the blame for a lot of things it's not really doing. It just seems like it's doing it. But here's what's going on. It's in my emotionality that I am finding all of this craziness. And in that emotionality, I'm kind of leaving the house behind, as I call it. Here's the way I deal with it. Reed, I often see my emotionality as unresolved hate and fear in me that can never be resolved. I have a lot of, regret, remorse, whatever, you know, we all do, inside of us and inside of me that I didn't know I had. There's all sorts of horse manure in there. Things that we shoved down that we didn't know we were shoving down, and things that we shoved down that we did know we were shoving down. So there's a whole gamut of crapola in there. You don't worry about it, okay? I think it's very important to have catharsis. And I have three meditations on the website. They're Energy Momentum 1, A Morning Jewel, and Heavy Breathers. These three are cathartic exercises that we all need to do. I use them every day because I have a very demanding job and I have all sorts of emotional stuff around it, and I cathart every day. So one of the things you're going to need to do is cathart. And go to the website here at Aspire.org. Go look at meditations, and there you will see a section on catharsis. For goodness sakes, go take a look at it and see if it's something you can do. A lot of people can't do it. They're too embarrassed to see what kind of poop lives inside. They don't want to see it. They don't want to believe it's there. The hubris of us is far stronger than our willingness, and it is very difficult for people in general, to be able to admit that they have this kind of stuff going on. But we do, all of us, me included. So if you're willing to do some catharsis and let go of some of this, then you'll be in a prime position to understand that the mind is only reflecting the state of my emotionality. Your emotionality. It is not a bad thing. It's not a terrible thing. It's just a perversion, as I like to think of it. And I have a very warped sense of humor. So I see it not as a serious thing, because if I get serious about it, I call it getting Dick Nixon serious about my mind, my state of mind, then it just becomes worse. So what I tend to do is I have a sense of humor about it. I don't take it seriously. And I focus my attention on my breath. And that's how I overcome it. Breath is everything. Focus on your breath is everything. And everything in your breath sustains focus and concentration. And it's a practice. It's not something you achieve overnight. Believe me, I have been doing it for many, many years, 40 years, and I'm still just beginning all the time. Beginner's mind, every day, over and over and over again. It is your consistency that matters, not your intensity. And if you are consistent in your practice, you will overcome certain emotionalities within you that are appeasing your weaker side, your lesser side. And that's when you really start making the difference in your life. And then you let that spread out into your daily living where your emotionality isn't conquering you all the time. And you keep your mind focused on your breath and things start to awaken in you. Oh, it's so beautiful. The awakening is so beautiful and it is simple. So don't get all caught up in the hubbub of the bub. Just let it be there. It's natural. It's called being human. But keep your focus on your breath and be consistent in your practice and do it every day at the same time. Be very disciplined and regimented about it in the beginning. And then as time goes on, you're going to see this really pays off and a lot of very beautiful things begin to happen. I hope that helps you read. Thank you for listening and please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, or something I could be of service to you, please, and this website here at aspire.org, go to the top of the page. You'll see contact. Just hit it. Send me an email. If you don't want me to use your name or where you live, that's fine. No problem. Just hit contact. Give me your question. Let me be of service to you. This radio program, this satsang, is supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gifts. It is your donations that make this possible. And I want to thank my sponsors, and I want to thank the mystery donor for being so kind. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.